Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Someone robs the Milwaukee Jamba Juice. Arizona gun shops are doing booming business. And Jared Lofner's ex-girlfriend says he was normal.
That was your instant karma, by the way, for saying that gun stores are doing, quote, booming business.
Yeah, I didn't even...
Sam!
I didn't even intend that, honestly.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed, as well as a few inadvertent puns laid in here and there for a sort of marbling effect, will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, shield your precious brain, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for January 14th, 2011. Milwaukee police are looking for a man who held up a Jamba Juice at gunpoint.
Not the Jamba Juice! Sarge, why do they always get the good ones?
Police said they got a 911 call from an employee of Jamba Juice on Southeast Oak Street in the Milwaukee Marketplace Thursday night. He told officers a man came into the store with a gun and demanded money.
Ooh, OMG. I want to start selling a product called Juggalo Juice.
I like that.
Just FYI. Okay.
The Milwaukee Jamba Juice, by the way, was the first Jamba Juice I ever patronized.
Really? Are we actually at this point in our lives and society, we're reminiscing about the first Jamba Juice you went to?
Well, I used to work at the Clackamas Review, and I remember Mike Russell used to go in and get Jamba Juice all the time, and he told me, "You gotta try this. This stuff's great. Come on in." And he dragged me into the Jamba Juice, and I was like, "So it's juice, and they put stuff in it, and they charge you like $7. And he said, "Yeah.
Well,
it's got vitamins."
He is one of our local sophisticates.
So, yeah. A Milwaukee police canine unit arrived within minutes and searched the area, but couldn't find a track in the shopping center. The worker described the thief as a white man in his 40s to 50s.
A white man in a Jamba Juice. Go figure.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Milwaukee, Oregon.
Yeah, he'll be easy to find.
He was about 5'8" and weighed about 150 pounds. He was also described, now keep on the lookout for this, as possibly balding or having very short hair.
Really? Did he also have a gym membership that he didn't really use all that often and weekend visitation with his kids?
He may have also been wearing a hoodie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, January 14th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also your science on the march. You can get this program later on the day if you like via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Two men accused of stealing the giant novelty head of ESPN sportscaster Lee Corso appeared in court on Thursday.
That's awesome.
August Cueno and Alexander Westerberg are accused of taking and then ditching the giant head of the ESPN sportscaster when Corso was in Corvallis for College Game Day in December. Both men appeared in Benton County Court for an arraignment on charges of second-degree theft. They both pleaded not guilty and will be back in court in early February.
Okay. It seems like I'd have more to say about that, and I just don't. When you say it's a giant novelty head...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really a sports enthusiast, so what do you mean? It's not like a bobblehead. Is it like a float?
I think it's like, I don't
like
know.
Like a balloon?
Like a human bobblehead.
But I mean, is it
It's like a mascot-style head, but it's of this ESPN sportscaster.
How large a head are we talking about, do you suppose?
Let me see if I can find more information
here. The giant novelty head.
I can show you.
I mean, that implies that it is, in fact, massive. That
yeah.
It has a size that is significant.
Because it was a giant head worth about $5,000.
Let's see.
Here's a picture of it.
Oh, wow. Even without anything in the foreground to give it a sense of scale, I get a sense that it is really... That's an all-encompassing head in terms of space.
Giant head.
I like the idea that they stole it, too. What were they going to do with it? You can't pawn that.
I don't know. I guess that's why they finally, they just dumped it somewhere, because they realized there was nothing they could do with it.
It's like when you steal the goat that's the mascot for the other team, and then you realize for your efforts, you now just have a goat that you can't take care of.
Now, I admit that I'm not the most savvy when it comes to the sporting events. But why is there a giant mascot head of an ESPN sportscaster at all?
I don't know. Why do bobbleheads exist in any way? I mean, what is the point? When did we become a society in which having some sort of a representation of you in which it looked as though you had been stricken by either a shrinking or an enlarging ailment at part of your body was considered sort of amusing or a thing that you would want to pay to have?
I don't know.
You know, it's like you got hit with the Dr. Shrinker ray, but only from the neck down. Yeah.
Patrick's sister sent him a Marvin the Martian bobblehead. But the thing is, when you do something that's based on a cartoon character, cartoon characters' heads are already bigger to begin with.
Yeah.
So he's really just to actual Marvin the Martian scale, and his head moves a little bit.
Yeah, but if you're getting one that is just like Fred Durst or Shaquille O'Neal or something, I don't really understand the point. I mean, I'm not like it upsets me. It's just a thing. The bobblehead thing is like the dancing Santa thing. It's like somebody just flipped on a switch in New York and decided we were all going to be into that. The other thing about the bobblehead is it is uncomfortably reminiscent to me of that guy who sits at the state fair and draws a caricature of you where you're on like a horse or a sled or a go-kart, and your head's real big and your body's real small and there's all kinds of bad action marks drawn around you.
See, I just see the sports ones, because there's a lot of sports ones and people collect the sports ones, and every time I see one of those I just think like, ooh, Reggie Jackson with Down syndrome.
I was going to say, you look like one of those kids that has to have straws stuck in his head to drain out the water.
Yes.
That's probably not the scientific way to...
No. Doctors put it differently.
It is amusing, though, to think that they got the giant head on the back of their car, and then they got home and they went, all right, now let's... And then it just trailed off into nothing as they realized there was no demonstrable use for the head.
Hey, we got it. We got the giant head. Hooray.
This is like that time. This is some years ago. And we're already getting off point. So this will be my one. This will be the conversational arterial that I take in this quarter hour. This is like some years ago we had, and I think at great expense these were made, we had some vinyl banners that were made for the Rick Emerson Show, and I think this is when we first had gone to CBS, and we did our first remote, and we had four of them, and you keep track of those things, because they're hundreds of dollars, I mean, they're absurdly expensive. So we had these four vinyl, thick vinyl banners for the Rick Emerson Show. We put up four of them, and then at the end of the event, there were only three, and we couldn't find the fourth one. And we were looking all over, and we're looking in the bathroom, and looking in the, in the storage room, and looking to see if they've been rolled up and put on the station vehicles. Never could find the fourth one. Have no idea where it went to. And then, like a year and a half later, I'm at the house of some guy who I don't know at the invitation of another guy, and I'm playing poker. And again, I've never been to this house. I don't know any of the guys inside. But I'm sitting there at the card table, and I'm playing poker. And then I sort of notice this thing that's hanging in the kitchen. And sure enough, in the kitchen is the fourth Rick Emerson Show banner. It was just hanging above the refrigerator. And I looked at the guy who owned the house, who was sitting at the table with me, and I said, is that a banner from my show that has ended up in your refrigerator? And without even really looking up, he just went, yeah. And then he just continued the deal. And there was like no further explanation given, but I realized that there really was no explanation that would have made any sense. Like there was no way to have put a rational framework around that. So, ba-ba-ba, huge head.
Yes.
Here's Dawn Taylor.
Business at the Glockmeister Gun Shop in Arizona is brisk.
That is fantastic.
After a gunman with a Glock killed six people in Tucson on Saturday. We're at double our volume over what we usually do, said star owner Greg Wolf, who predicted sales of the $499 semi-automatic pistols would surge in the wake of the shooting spree that left Representative Gabrielle Giffords severely wounded.
I hope that's like a, I wonder if they have like a cartoon mascot, you know? Who are you? I'm the Gluckmeister.
He's like a little gun, but he's wearing like lederhosen and one of those little hats.
See, and I was thinking we could go two ways. You could go the German route, or you could go the Rob Schneider route, where he's like, "Hey, Gluckman, Gluckmeister, Gluckamora."
I just like the idea of a anthropomorphic gun wearing lederhosen and holding a beer.
Yeah, and just, you know, and just looking sort of not angry, but just sort of really enthused in a jolly kind of way about the gun.
Trends at the Gluckmeister are reflected statewide. Sales of handguns 2 days after the shooting jumped 60% higher than they were a year ago, according to FBI data. Arizona gun dealers attribute the spike in sales to fears that the government may crack down on gun possession in the wake of the tragedy. Wolf told news service Bloomberg, when something like this happens, people get worried that the government is going to ban stuff. Others attribute the gun rush to fear. Whenever there's a huge event, especially when it's close to home, people do tend to run out and buy something to protect their family, said Don Gallardo, a manager at Arizona Shooters World in Phoenix. Gallardo reports that since the shooting, twice as many people have been flocking to his store's concealed weapons class as usual.
Glock, stock, and barrel. I'm sorry, we're on two different paths here.
Yeah.
Two concurrent, but different paths.
It's always interesting that people don't make sort of the leap of logic. Like, okay, gun control laws in Arizona might get tighter. That makes sense that you're going to run out maybe right now. And if you've been thinking about getting a gun, go get your gun now.
It's the Four Loko of the handgun world.
Yeah. It's the idea that your family is less safe because an insane guy who are, you know, there aren't that many of them to begin with, went to a political rally and shot a bunch of people. So you're making the leap that now you need a gun to protect your family?
Well, and also the idea that your family is going to be safer if you put a thing inside their home that is able to kill any of them in, like, an instant. Which just seems to sort of... And I'm not an anti-gun guy. It doesn't matter to me. Buy all the guns you want. I'm just saying, you know...
Many people are lax when it comes to the next step of gun ownership, which is make sure your child can't get it. That kind of thing.
It's not even that. It's just... And I forget the... I don't have the actual statistic in front of me, but it is... There's something like, you know, if you have a gun in your home, that the odds that it will be used on someone who is a resident there as opposed to used on someone who is not a resident, like, read, an intruder, it's like 200%, you know, it's like 200 times more likely that the gun will eventually be used on someone who lives in the house. So, yeah. You know, but again, I don't care.
That statistically, I think, has more to do with the kinds of people that own guns as a whole.
And which is fine with me. Look, Rick Emerson doesn't care. You know what? That's just that is sort of a self-regulating gene pool kind of a thing. If you're the kind of guy who shouldn't own a gun and you buy a gun, guess what? That problem fixes itself in about 10 or 15 years. You know, the first night you and your wife spend all day drinking schnapps and then decide to talk about all the girls you boned in high school, guess what? One less guy with a gun. So, you know, I don't care. Have at it.
They should ban schnapps.
They should just give guns for free. Guns and heroin should be available on every corner in just big barrels, you know? Sort of like that. It's like that take a book, leave a book thing that they've got here in Southeast Portland where you come by. I'm going to leave The Winds of War. I'm going to take Master of the Game by Sidney Sheldon.
Of course, is not the official opinion of Cascadia.fm.
It is.
Or even the show.
It is. And of our advertisers as well. And of our employees, our assigns, our heirs, of people just walking by the studio and glancing casually. If you're listening to the show, it's your opinion as well. Attention, co-workers and their lawyers. This is the opinion of everybody, even tangentially related to Legion of News. I'm just saying, if I put a big bucket of guns out there, and then like a big bucket of, like a big bucket of crack, and I said, hey, have at it. Or, you know, not. It's your choice. I figure that the people who are going to go and just dip into the big barrel of crack and take some home, and maybe a gun or two, those are probably the kind of people that shouldn't have those things because they're the most likely to misuse them, which means that one way or another, they will not be a problem within, I would imagine, a matter of weeks.
It's an interesting experiment.
Yeah.
If we had the funding, perhaps we could try that. Or we might get in trouble.
Oh, here's the other thing, by the way, and just as a little side note from me to you. Whether or not the government is coming to get you at some point, and look, they might be. It's not like that's without precedent. The government does come to get people every now and again. Yeah. That's what they do. They print money and they provide for the common defense, unless it's from cancer.
And then they oppress.
I mean, it's really one of their only skills. I mean, we can't really do a lot, a lot very well in this country, but we can kill people. But the thing is, like, if the government comes to get you, you're gotten. There's no... Nothing you can buy for like $300 at the store is going to stop the man from coming and getting you.
No.
All right? The man is like space alien death rays, you know, and didn't we decide the other day that the man had dinosaurs that were equipped with some sort of laser sighting?
Right.
Also things that'll just make your intestines fall out of your ass. So really, the idea that you're going to go and get your, like, your daddy's six shooter is going to stop the government from taking you away, not going to happen, friend. So just FYI. It is the Legion of News radio program broadcasting to you and to everyone around this glorious planet of ours. At the news desk, it is Dawn Tingler.
Clark Skamania Drug Task Force officers seized more than 600 marijuana plants from a Vancouver home on Thursday. The house on Northeast 25th Circle had its windows boarded up with drywall and contained expensive equipment and chemicals in the rooms. The electrical box was rigged to divert the power output before it got to the public utility district. Commander Mike Cook said officers were tipped off to the 600 plant operation when three teenagers were caught with pot at Union High School.
Excellent.
The students confessed to breaking into the house and stealing the marijuana inside, which is how the police found the grow operation.
And so this is not a legal grow. This isn't like a medical grow operation.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Not with boarded up windows and 600 plants. And
diverting the power from like a
right.
like a power pole or something outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
They estimate the marijuana is worth about $100,000. It was described as one of the biggest marijuana operations authorities have seen in a while. Neighbors said that they didn't know the homeowner well. A woman who was asked said, "When somebody new moves in, we're excited to meet them, but we never really got to know him or see who he was. He'd just drive into his garage and close the door."
Was it like the Oompa Loompas? Was there just a lot of shadows behind frosted glass late at night?
Well, they also said because of the way the grow operation and everything being like drywalled up and that sort of thing, mold was growing on the walls and the ceilings and actually started growing on the outside of the house in the garage. So this same neighbor says, "There's some gross stuff coming down the side of the house, and nobody else's house is doing that, so we've been wondering what was going on in there."
Just looked like Jordy Verrill's house, just covered in green fuzz everywhere. This is the thing I don't get about, and I know this sounds like it's sort of contradictory to my previous thing about the big bucket of crack and how we probably wouldn't take some home, but if we were going to be drug dealers, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you be this guy, or this group of guys? You know, they got 600 plants, which is a lot. I mean, that requires a lot of space and, you know, care and feeding, and you got to get your, you got to get your grow lamps and your whatever. 600 plants fills an entire house worth like $100,000. It seems like if you just had a big bucket of crack, you probably got twice the amount of money that you can make off of that. And it seems like it's simpler and it takes up less space and it's less likely to draw attention. The idea of growing a lot of weed illicitly just makes no sense to me, because it is a point of diminishing returns, and the punishment you could get is so vastly disparate, and the amount of resources it requires is so disproportionate to the money you're going to be making.
Yeah, my house that I don't own anymore, when I first moved in, I was looking around and looking in the basement, and I was trying to figure out why there was a separate room in the bottom that had been like sort of, you know, created like, you know, it's like a full concrete basement, but there was this one separate room at the end. And then I also noticed that there was some kind of like piping going from the water supply, like along the ceiling into that room. And I realized, and I'm like, and there's like three banks of fluorescent lights in here. What the hell? And then I went, And so I showed it to this guy I was dating once, and he was like, "Actually, you know, this basement would be awesome for that." And he started telling me, like, "And you get this, and you put filters on the windows and fans blown up, but you got to filter it so no one can smell it." And he's like, "We could totally do this." And then he started telling me, "I will completely put up the money to set this up if we can use your base." And I'm just going, "No,
Wait, I'm confused. So there wasn't a grow operation happening there?
Apparently there had, it looked like there had been one before I bought the house.
But then they left everything behind.
And they left, you know, like a riser and the fluorescent light banks and then this water line running from the old laundry tap that was on the other, on a different wall.
So it's like when you move into a new office that used to be a call center and there's 500 phone outlets everywhere and you go, "Hey, we could put in a call center here. It's already set up for it."
So yeah, okay. This guy was trying to convince me that that was a really good idea, and I was trying to explain to him that I didn't want to go to jail.
Yeah.
And he was explaining to me that, well, we could just, if we just did it once, just one crop, and we'd make X amount of money. And it's like, yes, but I might still go to jail.
And also, that is step one of everybody who ever ends up going to jail for dealing drugs. Is the I'm just going to do the dealing drugs is just like stripping or, you know, or whoring. You just say you're going to do it for about 18 months, and then the next thing you know, it's like you're 50 and covered in scabs. So, you know, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. And then there was that whole jail thing. I know myself well enough to know that I would not handle
jail
well.
No, you're soft. No, they'd go right after you.
Yeah.
It seems like you could just, you know, if you don't want to grow pot, you could just have a bustling, based on your description of it, you'd have some sort of a bustling business selling death's head moths and tucking your penis between your legs. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. That's also, by the way, the opinion of everybody associated with this program. Penis tucking. It's the next big thing. Here's Don Taylor.
It takes two church-approved miracles to become a saint, and on Friday, Pope John Paul II was credited with his first. Pope Benedict XVI put the late pope one step closer to beatification today, decreeing that Pope John Paul II miraculously cured a French nun suffering from Parkinson's disease.
Hurrah!
Hooray! Sister Marie Simon Pierre told a panel of Vatican doctors and theologians that she woke up 2 months after John Paul's death and was free of the disease that had long prevented her from walking or writing.
Wait, let me understand this. She was cured 2 months after he died. So he actually cured her, and he cured her from beyond the grave.
Yeah, I'm unsure of the
medical veracity of this.
The details of this, like, yes. You know, if he actually touched her or dealt with her in any way before he died. But anyway, Father Francis Rogge is a priest in Chicago, and he was elated when he heard the news.
Hearing this news, it's a joy not only to myself, but to the parish.
He sounds like he's filled with joy, doesn't he? Yeah. Just sounds very jubilant and elated at the belief in his risen Savior.
So doctors scrupulously examined the case and told the Congregation for the Causes of Saints that there was no scientific cause for her recovery.
Oh, man, I need a rim shot for things like this. Damn.
And miracle alone must have done it. What doctors actually say miracle alone must have caused something?
It's Dr. Vinnie Boomba.
Benedict put the wheels in motion to canonize John Paul almost immediately after his death, waiving the usual 5-year waiting period after calls of Santo Subito or Sainthood immediately broke out at his funeral. This priest in Chicago says this is an occasion for all Catholics to celebrate.
We know what he did for the whole church, not only for Polish church, but for the churches all over.
Sound a little bit like Father Guido Sarducci to you? Just the tiniest little bit there. Or maybe that's just a thing that in my head, any Catholic priest who has any kind of an accent or whatever just becomes Don Navarro in character. I don't know why. Just
we know what he did for the whole church, not only for Polish church.
I wish I knew a little bit more about this story now, because I want to know if this woman actually had any kind of interaction with him, or if this is one of those things where they just so want to make this guy a saint that they just came up with this thing that is really purely coincidental. She's Catholic, and she got better two months after the guy died, and they're going, cause and effect.
But, I mean, really, what answer could you be given that would possibly satisfy you? Because even if he said, like, you know, even if like a couple months before he died, he came to the hospital, hey, you know, stiff upper lip, all right, and chucked her on the shoulder, and then went home, and so therefore you knew that he had touched it, like, would that satisfy you? No.
I think if he had come to her bedside in the hospital and had laid hands on her and maybe wept, and his tears, like, fell upon her flesh, and then maybe, like, 2 months later after he died, she got better, then I might think, okay, I could see how you might make a case.
Are you trying to look at it? You're trying to see how it would make sense, at least from their perspective.
Yeah.
Not from your own as such, but
no.
I mean, from that. Yeah, but that way, you just can't do that, because there's just, no, that is just such a funhouse mirror, you know, reflection of reality. You're never going to, because here's the thing about the Catholic Church, is that, you know, I am a long ago fallen Catholic, but the Catholic Church for the longest time, one of the endearing things about the Catholic Church, or comforting things about the Catholic Church, has been, they didn't, there was no, what did we just? You said Jeff Futzer? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah, Jeff Futzer.
I was gonna say they never futzered anything. They never fudged any of the lines between black and white and between, you know, it was a very binary system. For example, you could look at the Catholic Church and say the Catholic Church was opposed to ending someone's life, period. Catholic Church was opposed to abortion. Catholic Church opposed to euthanasia. Catholic Church opposed to the death penalty. That there was no, you know, that the Catholic Church did not make exceptions. The Catholic Church said, this is right and this is wrong, and there are no exceptions ever under any circumstances. And you might disagree with them, but at least you should. But it was that thing of, like, you actually didn't know where they stood on stuff. And the Catholic Church has always been, they've been real hardcore about who gets beatified and who gets, what is the other term? It's escaping me now. Because beatification
canonized?
Is not...
No.
Canonized, yes, because a beatification, well done, is not being made a saint. It's the first step on the road to sainthood, and you have to have two miracles attributed to you to become a saint. And they've always been real, and you got to wait 5 years after the person's dead. It's sort of like being on a postage stamp, where you got to be, like, dead 20 years, and it's like, and you have to be, I think you have to be an actual living person, which is why Santa Claus can't be on a stamp, because it would indicate that he was dead. And they don't want to creep your children out. But you know who ruined everything? In death, as in life, Mother Teresa just screwed everything up for everybody. You know, it told Indians they couldn't use rubbers, and then decided to set the Catholic Church on this insane path of just making people saints like 30 seconds after. Like, as the nurse is reaching for the plug to the ventilator, they would just immediately be rolling out, miracle number five! And then they would just have a bust at St. Peter's Cathedral. Doesn't make any sense at all. It's a world gone mad.
I guess I just want my magic to have some sort of sense that it'll make sense in, you know, at least a little bit.
Right.
I just want them to try to convince me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I looked in my fridge last night and I found that all the hard-boiled eggs that I had made, like, weeks ago that I thought might have gone bad, they hadn't actually gone bad. And, you know, Leslie Nielsen died 2 months ago. Maybe he blessed my eggs from beyond the grave, and that's why my hard-boiled eggs didn't go bad.
You should write that down, you know, right now, and then go put up a webpage about it later and just see what kind of traction you can get with that. We should see if we can get him beatified, you know? How great would that be if you had Leslie, like, if you had a Leslie Nielsen,
Saint
Nielsen pendant that you could wear, you know? And he would just be like, you know, he would be like the patron saint of, like, clowns and sewage workers.
Yeah, and hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah.
Clarinet practice, making French toast, the occasional Super Mario Brothers game. These were activities that Jared Loughner pursued with his teenage sweetheart and hardly foreshadow a descent into madness.
I'm sorry, what were the activities again?
Clarinet practice, making French toast, and playing Super Mario Brothers.
Well, okay, never mind.
6 years ago, before Loughner allegedly killed six people and wounded several others.
Guilty!
His now ex-girlfriend, Kelsey Hawks, said Loughner was completely normal. I wouldn't have dated him if there was anything wrong, she said. She's now a 21-year-old student at the University of Arizona in Tucson. She met Loughner at a high school football game and found they both liked music and were a bit shy.
I instinctively disbelieve this because here's the thing. We have all, and but I say we all, I mean you and I, have dated many, many crazy people. You always know. The idea that you don't know, that's like women go, I had no idea he was the kind of guy that would blacken my eyes every time I came home late, which is a lie. You always know if a guy is the sort to just bash out your teeth for some perceived slight, and you always know if the girl you're dating is the kind that's going to set your stuff on fire eventually. To say that you don't know is just not true.
The thing is, though, we all know guys, and women too, but I'm particularly thinking of guys in this point. We all know guys that you know there's something wrong, that there's just something wrong. And yet, these guys, at least sometimes, get girlfriends. And so I always wonder, if maybe not everyone sees, even in retrospect, that there was crazy.
No, they do. It's just that crazy is hot sometimes. I'm not saying with this guy, because he looks a little... He seems unappealingly crazy, but I'm not a woman, so I'm not the target demo, clearly. Hot is sexy. There's no getting around that. Oh, come on. Don't be coy. You know that's true.
No, but I'm just saying maybe some people are so bad at recognizing it that even after they break up with the person years later, they still don't really actually realize that they were nuts.
I don't know. It seems like if you show that guy's mugshot to like 100 people on the street, that's like 100 out of 100 are going to go, yeah, there's something wrong with him. And I don't believe he was fundamentally different like a year ago.
Well, she told the Wall Street Journal, I liked his personality. He was nice, attentive.
Except for the killing.
He was never rude. He had no interest in drugs or alcohol. He was respectful. He would give me compliments and never ignore me. She eventually asked him to be her boyfriend, and he enthused, I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have we considered the possibility that she is crazy?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying she is. I'm just wondering. I'm speculating.
I do like, she said, they dated for 10 months. The relationship faded. They broke up. She said, I just wanted to be single. And then she said, I knew he was really sad, but he mostly kept it to himself.
Okay. Until the very end there. That was less to himself. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for coming by. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, Clown Watch today. For some reason, I read that as Magnet Club. I didn't know what, I know what it says now, but I looked at the bottom thing there, and I was like, Magnet Club?
Magnet Club.
I wondered if it was an exciting new band that I wasn't privy to. Penis Watch, Clown Watch, we will have...
That's the fetish I'm working on. Big, Magnet Club.
Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us today doing a couple things. Another installment of Humory, Comedy 101. Today's subject is Ms. Margaret Cho. There was a great thing written on his Facebook page last night. Whatever one thinks about the truth of this, our friend Adam Thompson, late of CBS Radio, who's a funny guy himself, and so he's sort of allowed to just pass instant judgment on things. But somebody had noted that Jim was going to be in the studio doing the Humor Me About Margaret Cho, and Adam just noted, "I've eaten dogs that were funnier than Margaret Cho." I can't take credit for that. That's Adam Thompson.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it was like 5 seconds after the post that he responded with that. So well done, sir. Yeah, Humor Me, Comedy 101.
God.
Margaret Cho, and also Jim Willig will be counting down his top five songs about drinking. That'll be coming up later on today. The Rick Emerson Show. That is at rickemersonshow.com.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march for Friday, January 14th, 2011.
The long-extinct woolly mammoth could be brought back to life within 4 years after a breakthrough in cloning technology by who, Rick Emerson?
The Japanese.
Exactly. Researchers have tried unsuccessfully in the past to recover nuclei in cells from the skin and muscle tissue of mammoths found frozen in permafrost, according to the Daily Telegraph. The attempts failed because the cells were too damaged by the extreme cold. However, the technique pioneered by Dr. Terahiku Wakayama of the Riken Center for Developmental Biology has succeeded in cloning a mouse from the cells of another, which had been frozen for 16 years. Akira Iritani, a professor at Kyoto University, said the same technique could be used to resurrect the woolly mammoth, which died out about 5,000 years ago. Now the technical problems have been overcome, he said. All we need is a good sample of soft tissue from a frozen mammoth.
Isn't this a thing they did? Are they just getting ideas from the Sci-Fi Channel now? I'm pretty sure that about 18 months ago, this was the plot of a terrible, terrible movie starring Debbie Gibson.
I swear we will see Sharktopus in our lifetime.
You know, I feel bad that I didn't watch that when it aired. Sharktopus has come and gone. I guess I could watch it now, but it came and went. I haven't watched it.
The woolly mammoth would be conceived by inserting the nuclei into the cell eggs of an African elephant, which would act as the surrogate mother. The first cloned woolly mammoth, he said, could be born in about 4 years.
That's fantastic. No, I really am. I'm wholeheartedly in favor of that, because it seems like we're already just violating like God's or nature's law. You know, anyway. You know, it's like the we got
mice that tweet like birds.
Seriously, and a robot that tests your pain levels by stabbing you with something in Sweden. It's like I think we've broken the seal on that particular bottle already. So like, there's no, you know, we're effed. We might as well have some fun with it before nature turns on us.
Yeah, there will never again be a movie where someone declares we cannot act like gods.
Yeah, that's
because that's just what we do now.
The ship has sailed.
That's what science does.
Yeah, that's all we do.
Yeah.
We don't cure anything.
No,
we just create hell creatures that are going to come and pull your spine out.
Personal computer sales dropped internationally last quarter as more people opted for iPads, according to the Financial Times. In comparison to a year earlier, worldwide PC sales grew only 2.7%, as opposed to the 5.5% predicted, and analysts say that tablets are likely to keep eating into the PC market.
I was actually going to say, before you even get to the iPad thing, that might be deceptive, because it seems like... Because your Android phone or your iPad basically is a personal computer. I guess they must mean a... Something with it. The difference must be a separate keyboard. That's got to be it.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Because a laptop obviously still counts as a PC, I sort of. So it must be a separate keyboard. That's got to be how they're making the distinction. Because otherwise, because if it wasn't the keyboard, what would the distinction be?
Well, yeah, that is the...
That has to be
Yeah,
it.
That is.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like, you know, PC sales are still growing, but they're growing... much slower than they always have in
right.
the past. The bottom line is that computer sales are still on the up, though. With new models set to hit stores later this year, IDC analyst Jay Chow predicts that 44 million tablets and 385 million personal computers will be sold by the end of 2011. Researchers also warned that smartphones and game devices could deal another blow to computers and possibly encourage manufacturers to start producing more stripped-down tablet-like computers. But while PC sales have dipped, the Financial Times points out the issue may just be a matter of semantics. If tablets were considered PCs, the overall market would be showing tremendous growth.
Which they are. I mean, that's the thing. That is where they're just making a false distinction there. They really... I mean, that's... That's why, I mean, as dumb as it kind of sounded at the time, that's why I spent like, you know, a month trying to figure out what phone I was going to get. Because it's, as my friend Trevor pointed out, it's like when you get a phone now, you are getting a piece of hardware. You are getting a substantial piece of hardware for your computing system. And that's why it's justified to take, you would take that much time to consider it. Here's something that a guy mentioned to me, I guess maybe yesterday, the day before, and I don't know whether he was just making this up, like, on the fly, if he just really came up with this idea, if he has some knowledge that it's going to happen, or if it's some middle ground where he heard it speculated, but he doesn't really know one way or the other. So, you know, I've got the MacBook here, and, you know, he said something, you know, if you've seen, like, most Mac laptops look pretty much the same at this point, but he said that, in his opinion, the next thing will be that they will sell you a MacBook that looks exactly like mine, except when you want to, the screen will just detach and you can take it with you as an iPad.
Oh, that is nice.
And that just blew my mind because it had never occurred to me.
Well, that's sort of the reverse of the docking station with keyboard and charger thing that you can get for the iPad.
Well, it's just like an Avatar thing, because that's what they do in Avatar, where the screens are actually hooked into those, yeah. In the Sigourney Weaver's, you know, place where they got the screens hooked in everywhere. And then Giovanna Ribisi would go, well, for example, and he would detach it from the docking station. He would carry it with him. And so the idea that this computer could then just come apart and the screen would go with me as an iPad is just, I mean, it's just like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be, but it really is for some reason.
In an event, the blog Engadget predicts will be on par with Deep Blue versus Garry Kasparov, IBM's Watson supercomputer will face off against Jeopardy champions Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter next month in a special episode of The Quiz Show. Before taping began on Friday, the show took Watson for a trial spin, shooting a practice session that's now available to watch online. Unfortunately for human contestants, Watson proved a formidable opponent on subjects ranging from archaeology to children's books.
Well, that's not impressive at all.
No, it's a computer.
That's completely unimpressive. That's like saying that you would fail against a dictionary in a spell check contest.
At the end of a perfect teaser round, the machine was in the lead with $4,400, with Jennings at $3,400 and Rutter trailing with $1,200. Engadget explains that during the 3 seconds Watson takes to formulate an answer, the machine runs thousands of algorithms for comprehension and answer formation, comparing them against each other to come up with the likeliest results. Per Jeopardy rules, no internet connection is allowed. If Jennings and Rutter want a better shot of beating the machine, the tech site advises, they have to beat that window and buzz in early.
It seems like the only reason it's even taking the thing 3 seconds is because it's got to process. It has to do some sort of speech recognition on the question, right?
Pretty much.
Because otherwise,
yeah.
it's basically just an encyclopedia. It's just got to go look up the answer. It's not like it has to actually. Because even in chess,
it has to calculate what the likeliest answer is.
But there is no likeliest answer. There's just the answer.
Yeah.
That's a binary thing. There is no likeliest answer. There is one answer. And it either knows the answer, which is, again, a hard, concrete piece of finite, provable information, or there is something that is not the answer. So I dispute when they say it has to find the likeliest answer, because that implies that there's more than one correct answer to a question, which there provably is not. So this is just like you facing off against the Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, in terms of knowing what the population of the Sudan is. It's an inaccurate way to gauge whether the machine is actually better than the human or something, as opposed to chess, which is sort of a little fuzzier, because even though chess is basically a flowchart, it's a series of, and I know I'm just going on about this, but this is an important distinction to me, because even though chess is just a flowchart and it's a series of mathematical choices, chess also has a little bit of fuzzy logic in that, for example, with Deep Thought and Deep Blue, you know, the thing that hung them up forever am I just becoming some tiresome guy who just goes on about things? I am. Never mind.
You don't really want me to answer that, do
you? I don't even need IBM to answer that for me. That is actually a thing. I beat the buzzer on that myself. But you know, the thing that hung them up forever on chess computers was trying to get the computer to understand the concept of a sacrifice. Because the computer never wanted to sacrifice a piece, like, ever. And they could not get the computer. Because they taught it, they're like, well, the point, you know, the goal is to have, you know, is to checkmate the king. And you do that by having the most pieces and the most pieces at the greatest value and whatever. And also that there was a point system ascribed to the pieces. And so the computer just decided that it would never, ever lose a piece. And it would do whatever it took not to. And meanwhile, humans would sacrifice something for, you know, a play 75 moves down the line. And the computer took, like, years to figure out how to do that. So this is not that.
No.
And that's it. That's the end of that.
Okay.
All right.
Forget financial or romantic concerns. A new study from Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare offers a surprisingly straightforward explanation for why the country's birth rate is dropping. It turns out that young Japanese people aren't interested in sex. According to a survey of 1,300 people between the ages of 16 and 19, 36% of men reported being indifferent or averse to sex, while 59% of women said the same. Compared to a 2008 study, that's a 19% increase in sexual apathy among men and a 12% increase for women.
I know this gets said a lot on the internet, but are they doing it wrong?
They might very well be.
Has somebody gone to see that the Japanese are actually having sex the way they're supposed to?
I don't think. Yeah. Well, come on. They have dirty panties and vending machines.
Well, that was going to be my next question. When they say that they're indifferent to sex, does that just mean normal sex? Because let's be honest, tentacle porn. You know. I mean, it's, you know, like, well, there's that whole thing. You know, they've got that whole bizarre thing now of the virtual celebrities of the you know, female singers who go and they Seamus sent me this whole article about it, where they'll go on these three-dimensional avatars that don't exist, and they're not even really modeled on real people, and the voice isn't, in fact, even a real person. The voice is computer-generated as well. And it was like this three-dimensional avatar, sort of an anime-looking avatar, performing a completely, you know, a written-from-scratch pop song with a voice that was from scratch, and, again, a completely virtual, non-actually existent body performing at a stadium for 20,000 people. And I thought, well, you know, that's, I mean, really, that's a big, that is a huge step forward right there, because there's absolutely nothing real about her in any way.
No.
And yet people are going and paying and sitting and standing and waving a glow stick.
Well.
So like the sex, this, you know, it
the
seems
sex
like,
thing, yes.
It seems like if you grow up, you know, learning about, if you grow up, if we take it as read, and we hear about this a lot in America, that the media impacts how men view women, for example, and our sexual and physical expectations of women, if those are imprinted on you by the media, and if you are growing up in Japan, and if the media imprints on you a woman who is not just unrealistic, but in fact does not exist and cannot exist, then it seems like that might skew you right out of the gate in terms of what you want to hump.
Yeah, you can only have so many generations of men looking at, like, manga characters in schoolgirl outfits before it sort of, you know, twists your brain in tiny little pieces.
Right.
While researchers suggest that respondents may just be reflecting a delayed interest in sex, in comparison to older studies, men between the ages of 30 and 34 were the only ones with a more increased sex drive. Japan's diminished libido still has officials concerned. Kunio Kitamura, head of the Japan Family Planning Association, said, "The findings seem to reflect the increasing shallowness of human relations in today's busy society."
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
So they're cloning woolly mammoths, and they're crazy about robots, but apparently they don't like having sex.
Which is weird, because we had some other story last year where about, like, Japanese women, like, I don't know, like the whole boob size has gone up, like, by a cup and a half or something. And it starts when you're, like, four or whatever now. Like, you got to get a bra before you go to preschool or something, because there's, I don't know, because of steroids or global warming or something. Like, boobs are a lot bigger.
But maybe the gentlemen in Japan don't like that. Maybe they like small boobs.
Well, then they're not really gentlemen, are they, Don? Gentle something, but it doesn't end in men.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. That's your science, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them, won't you please, at 503.
They must be so proud.
252-1609. Well, look, somebody's got to just convey the facts to the people. Somebody has to speak the plain truth, Don. You know, it's a complicated world. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of static out there. There's a lot of conflicting information. Somebody has to cut through it all and just tell people the way it is.
Is that us?
Right to the core. That's us.
Oh!
No, that's where you step up and you go, damn right.
Oh, that's us.
Anyway, SquiresElectric.com is the website to find out more about them. 503-252-1609 and get free estimates so you know up top what it's going to cost you. And if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, whether you are expanding, whether you're remodeling, whether you're you know, just expanding your business from one business to two offices to three offices to a whole new building, or if you are just moving into a new home and you want to make sure you know, that what you think you're getting is what you are in fact getting. If it operates as you know, if it operates according to all, you know, the required codes, and if it's going to handle, you know, whatever computing equipment you're going to bring in or all of your appliances you're going to move in, because you don't want to buy a house, you move in all your stuff, and then the first time you plug everything in, suddenly your roof blows off. So, you know, you don't want that. You want to make sure that the house functions properly, especially in Portland. A lot of houses built 50, 60, 70 years ago. The wiring is just, you know, fine for then, less so for now. So you will find out more by calling Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Wires of any kind and wiring of any kind in your home or business, they can make sure that it works and works properly the first time. 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. Here is Don Taylor.
Via email, I've received from listener John an explanation of the giant Lee Corso head. On the ESPN TV show Game Day, Lee Corso is one of the hosts. Game Day travels around the country to the what they consider the most significant game of the day. This year, the show was in Corvallis because if the Ducks won, they were going to go to the national championship. The traditional end of the show is when they make their selections of who's going to win that day, and Lee Corso demonstrates his choice by putting on the helmet or often the head of the mascot of the team he's going to choose. Lee Corso has usually chosen the Ducks because he's a fan of the University of Oregon. And they made a commercial of Lee Corso walking down a street in Eugene wearing the Oregon Duck head and the Oregon Duck mascot walking down the street wearing a giant Lee Corso head. So that's why there's a giant Lee Corso head, because there was this Oregon Ducks commercial.
This is what somebody meant when they said the explanation would take way too long, but just trust me, there's a reason.
But now...
Now we know.
Now we know.
Okay. All right.
And knowing Rick Emerson?
It's, in this case, I would say all of the battle.
Yes.
Because I'm not going to think about it after today, just so you know. What's that noise you just made?
Just,
are you extracting a tooth?
Sadness.
Okay.
A woman's purse was detonated Thursday in Lockford, California, after a bank robbery witness reported it might have been a bomb. Traffic was halted along Highway 88 for hours as the bank robbery was investigated. It reopened before noon. Officials said a man went into the Bank of the West branch at about 9:30 a.m. and demanded cash. On the way out, he apparently dropped a woman's purse. A witness nearby said they thought it was a bomb. So a bomb squad was called in. A robot was used to take the woman's purse away and detonate it. And there was nothing explosive inside the woman's purse.
It's got to be a surreal way to end your day. You know, when the cops are coming, they're taking your handbag away, and then they're blowing it into tiny little pieces in the middle of it.
It's just my purse.
Hey, let me ask you this. Have you seen this thing that you ladies do now? Wait, have you seen the thing where, like, handbags that come with little feet on the bottom to keep the bottom from getting scuffed?
Well, I think those have always existed.
I have never seen those before. I was at the... It's a long story. I was at Zappos. I was looking to buy shoes. At Zappos, and they have this whole thing, you know, and it's like they sell the handbags and whatnot there, too. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that that was a thing that actually existed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not popular. It hasn't been popular on most types of handbags, of bags. The soft-sided and soft-bottomed bags don't usually have it. But I remember, like, my mother had a bag that was a sort of a handbag that was a hard-bottomed, almost like sort of a lady's like travel case, but very tiny. It was a handbag. And yeah, it had these tiny little feet on the bottom so that...
See, I thought it was a recent innovation. I was going to be all impressed.
Oh, no.
Not unlike that little not that little white thing in the middle of the pizza that keeps the box from pressing down on it.
Yeah, that is good.
See, that's fantastic. I want to know who invented that thing. That's one of the most glorious inventions of the last 20 years, I'm telling you. Yeah. And the thing is, like, you could have had that in 1910, you know, but just nobody thought of it. So, all right.
Police in Howard County, Maryland, recovered 78 rabbits living in poor conditions in a Columbia home. According to Howard County Police, officers acting on an anonymous tip found 64 rabbits roaming free in the house this week. Police said the homeowner agreed to surrender the rabbits to animal control.
Tell me more about the rabbits, Don.
Police said officers returned to the house on Thursday and found an additional 14 rabbits, which brings the total to 78. Elizabeth Schoen of the Howard County Police Department said these rabbits were roaming free. There was a significant amount of clutter and debris in the home. The animal wastes were kind of taking over the house. Police said the animals were found dirty and in an unsafe environment, but that they were in good health. A veterinarian is examining them before they're prepared for adoption. The animal control officers and police are determining whether a 46-year-old woman and her 18-year-old son will face criminal charges about it. They've lived in the home for several years.
I couldn't figure out which way to go there, but it was up until the very last moment, it was a coin toss. It was between that and making the observation that bunnies aren't just cute like everybody supposes.
I was like, one of the neighbors said, I haven't heard any complaints, and it's hard for me to believe she would have that many rabbits, and nobody would have known.
From whom would she have heard complaints? From the rabbits? Hey, do rabbits make noise? I mean...
I think only when they're scared.
I mean, if you stab one, I imagine it would, but I mean, just like... They don't claw or cluck or bark or anything.
No.
A barking rabbit would be weird. They could make that now, though, in Japan.
Probably.
If you just like, ooh,
make
there should
totally tweets like a bird.
We should totally raise money. We should totally have like a bake sale or something, and then raise money to have a Japanese scientist create some hell creature for us that like sort of, you know, I shouldn't be kind of a thing, like like some sort of Moreau.
That would be great.
Yeah,
or
like
maybe
we could
just get one of those tweeting mice.
Like what about a fish that yodeled?
That'd be good.
Or let's see, what else could you get?
a ferret with an exposed brain.
Yeah, it seems like that's a pet that... Yeah. It seems like the life expectancy on that pet is rather finite.
Yeah.
Let's see, there's got to be... what if you had a...
A cross between a chicken and a wolverine? I don't know what its purpose would be, but it would be pretty scary.
Especially, you know, because... If it was really tasty, you know, then that becomes a sort of irresistible force, immovable object sort of thing where you just, you know, you shouldn't, but you want to.
Well, you want to catch it and eat it, but it won't let you.
All right.
Because it's dangerous.
Somebody wants to know if there was no bomb in the purse, how did they, quote, detonate it? Did they put a bomb in the purse?
Yeah. Bomb squads blow up stuff on spec all the time.
Really? So they actually have their own mini bombs they take out with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. Okay. I have no end to this. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, heard in 147 countries around planet Earth. That is at rickemersonshow.com. Penis Watch today. Clown Watch today. Big Jim Willig in the studio with Humor Me, Comedy 101 today, talking about Margaret Cho. He'll also be counting down his top five songs about drinking. That is coming up at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
How about a giant chipmunk what walks like a man?
You mean just sort of on its hind legs?
Yeah, and it's huge.
Okay.
It's like 4 feet tall.
Or what
just,
about...
And it just walks around.
What if you could... no, I can't beat that. No, I was going to say, if it was like 4 feet tall and it just sort of strutted around, it would be sort of like the... it would be kind of like that kangaroo in the Warner Brothers thing that Sylvester always thought was a mouse.
Yes.
It would be sort of like that walking around and just occasionally just going like... and then punching you in the face.
Yes.
Okay. No, I'm with that.
And looking for giant nuts. But there are none, so it's just angry all the time.
What about an earthworm that would call in the morning and wake you up? That would cockadoodle do at the crack of dawn.
It would have to be a fairly large worm, or else you wouldn't hear it.
Yeah, I guess.
Otherwise, it'd just be like, yeah, you know, it would be off in the corner somewhere.
Okay.
Convicted mob boss John Sonny Franzese is so old he knew Frank Sinatra in his heyday. He's so old his recent extortion trial became a nap time when his turncoat son took the witness stand against him. But a federal judge decided Friday that Franzese is not so old that he can avoid prison. Franzese, 93, was sentenced to 8 years in prison for extorting Manhattan strip clubs and a pizzeria on New York's Long Island.
Well done.
The jailed Franzese appeared alert while sitting in a wheelchair in federal court in Brooklyn. But when asked if he wanted to speak, he managed only a fragmented mumble of, "I never got a fare." Federal prosecutors had sought at least 12 years behind bars for the underboss of the Colombo crime family, in effect a life term. To bolster their argument, they had an FBI agent testify Friday that Franzese bragged about killing 60 people over the years and once contemplated putting out a hit on his own son for becoming a government cooperator.
I like the fact that he's 93 and he's still pissed off about it, though. He's bitter even now about going to jail. He's just digging in his heels and fighting it the whole way. Were these crimes that he committed recently, or is this like stuff he did in the 70s? Do you think that they're just now getting him for it?
I think this is actually recent stuff.
He's
been convicted over and over and over again over the years. His career goes back to the Depression. His first arrest came in 1938 for assault. Prosecutors said he was kicked out of the Army 4 years later after displaying homicidal tendencies.
You know, this is the fault of liberal judges, Don.
In 1947, he raped a waitress in a garage. In 1966, he beat a murder charge, accusing him of killing a rival and dumping the body with cement blocks chained to the feet into the bay.
They actually did that.
Apparently
I thought that was
so.
A thing that just existed in, like, bad cartoons or something from the 60s. Yeah.
He was also convicted in 1967 of bank robbery, sent to prison and paroled in the late 70s. He wasn't convicted of another crime after that, but they said he rose to second in command of the Colombo family. And now it's like, here he is at 93. They're just basically going, you know, anything we've got on you, we're just going to make you end your days in prison. Extorting strip clubs. That's what they have him on now.
Well, I mean, when you look back, it really, for large sections of the 20th century, it was a pretty good time to be a criminal, I think. Because for whatever reason, we didn't start getting really intolerant about crime. I mean, I guess we've had sort of a bell curve. Because there was a point, you know, however many hundred years ago, where you commit a crime and you just, you know, there was, you know, there's no trial. You know, you just get that the townspeople just killed you. You know, the townspeople, you know, they just cut you into little pieces and tossed you into the bay. And then now we're sort of back on the whole, you know, this is a social outrage about things. And, you know, you get the guy who's like his third strike is stealing a loaf of bread and he goes away for the rest of his life. But there was this middle period for most of the 20th century where, like, this guy was just, I mean, you could just be in and out, just, you know, like, it, you know, in the morning and out later that afternoon, you know, to go off to another day of pillaging.
And he was a man about town, and probably everybody everybody in Brooklyn knew who he was and knew what he did. And they were like, oh, there he is. There's Sonny Franzese. He's a criminal. Here, yeah. Have a drink.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody wants to be sort of, who has not decided, you and I probably had this conversation, or you had it in your head, that you look forward to being an old person so you can just be cranky and just tell people just to get bent. You know, and if a guy gives you any lip, you can just give him a good cuffing because you're going to be old. Who's gonna, this? He has just taken that to a different level. He has taken that to its logical extension. A guy wrongs you, you just have one of his eyes jabbed out, you know?
You could have him whacked.
Won't even find his way to your lawn after that point.
Let's do a tiny little bit of entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday.
Backstreet Boys member AJ McLean has checked into rehab. The singer previously spent time in rehab in 2001 and 2002 to seek treatment for substance abuse, anxiety, and depression. With 2011 being a busy year for the Backstreet Boys, I want to be healthy and perform and sing for people at my best and happiness, he said.
Moving it from the bottom of the list to the top.
None of this will affect our current tour plans, and I look forward to seeing everyone really soon, he said in a statement. Colin Firth received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on Thursday. During his career, the 50-year-old has starred in A Single Man, Bridget Jones' Diary, The English Patient, and Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Video game sales in the United States in 2010 were about the same as they were in 2009, according to a market research group. While sales of portable console and PC games down about 5%, the sale of used games, digital downloads, games for smartphones, and games played over social networks increased to keep the overall sales figures around $15.5 billion.
Yeah, if you're somebody who's making video games for the PC or something, that's got to be, you got to feel the clock ticking on you there.
Yeah, the Xbox 360 was the only console to sell more units in 2010 than in 2009.
Ooh, ooh.
Possibly because of the Kinect.
Yeah.
Maybe. Although the Kinect's a separate thing.
Well, the Kinect is a separate thing. Also, And who knows? Because Greg Nibbler, because that whole thing, you know, Laura had made that observation on Facebook. She's like, I hope somebody's getting me a Kinect for Christmas. That would really be swell. Which I did not, by the way. Largely, and it's Seamus' fault, baby, if you're listening. It's Rick Emerson wanted to buy you a Kinect, but Seamus, he told me no. He just said, you know, like so many things, you know, you wait until like a second generation. Because Microsoft, you know, it's like, you don't want to be some douche who gets the first Zune, you know, yeah. Because then it's like, you know, then you're that guy. But eventually they usually come around on those things. But he was like, you know, wait till the second or third generation or something. So I don't think it's the Kinect. I think it's that the Xbox, from what I have seen anyway, they have done a better job than anyone else of moving toward making the video game console just the electronic portal, period, for all of your stuff. I mean, because you can do, like, half the stuff we would do on the computer now, we can do through the Xbox.
Yeah, you can stream Netflix, you can do your email.
You can do Facebook, do everything. I think it's got the Rhapsody service, it's got Last.fm, it's got, like, your picture sharing, so it really is, I mean, they say what you want about Microsoft, they are really at the front of the curve there.
Producers for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark announced that the musical has pushed its opening night back for a third time. Now, instead of February 7th, it's going to open March 15th.
Okay, now this is in New York?
Yes.
Where is it at? What's the venue?
I don't remember.
All right.
I don't think it says. The show, the most expensive in Broadway history, has been in preview since November 18th and plagued with technical issues, injuries, and actor departures. Performances scheduled for January 18th and January 25th have also been canceled, and ticket holders will be offered refunds or exchanges. In a release, the producer said the show was 10 times more complicated than anything else, and the preview schedule allows for only very limited rehearsal time. We simply need more time to fully execute the creative team's vision. Before freezing the show.
So it's been moved to the premiere, the opening has been moved to March 15th.
To March now, yeah.
Here's why I asked this. There's the tiniest chance that I may be in New York that week. And I'm telling you right now, if that happens, if I'm going to be in New York, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I don't care what favors I have to owe people. I don't care, you know, what I have to pawn. I don't care what are my organs I have to, like, you know, lend out. I will find a way to attend that Spider-Man thing if I'm going to be in New York when it's going to open. Presuming there are tickets available, Rick Emerson's going to find a way to go. Because how freaking awesome would that be?
Oh, that would be great.
All right. Awesome. On that note, we should probably do this. And by this, I mean end this episode of Legion of News and bring to a conclusion your week. Thank you for listening. Don't forget the program is available later on today as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com or via iTunes. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Penis Watch, Clown Watch, and our guest Big Jim Willig will count down his top five songs about drinking, and we'll have our weekend installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and work of Ms. Margaret Cho. That is all coming up at rickemersonshow.com, where the humor continues unabated for just 32 cents a day. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We will see you again Monday at noon for another installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Friday, won't you?